Today is Tuesday, July 29th. It is 1:35 p.m. and I am Brady Kreitzer.
My name is Paul Black. I'm a retired faculty member. I've been retired for 5 years, retired in 03. Came to Slippery Rock in 1972. Just as the collective bargaining agreement came into operation. I also was here as a student from 1960 to 1963. So I bring two perspectives to this interview, that of a student and that of a faculty member.
Okay, you mentioned your two perspectives. Can you talk about a little more detail your affiliation, starting from your time as a student? And then into a faculty member with the university?
Well, in 1960, I came as a transfer student from Duquesne University. Graduated in January of 63. We basically only had one men's dorm. That was Patterson. It was new, and we really liked it. It was divided into two wings, and a fellow by the name of Herb McGivney was the dean of the dean of men. He may have become the dean of students, I don't know, but the female students were housed in North Hall, and there was a dean of women, and I think that was Lois Harner. And I came as an education major. Social studies and English were my two certification areas. My preference was social studies, in particular history and political science. I left Slippery Rock in 63. I returned as a faculty member in 1972, and what a pleasant experience that was. Some of my former professors were still on the faculty, and the professionalism with which they greeted me was just overwhelming. And these were professors from a number of departments who became my colleagues and have since retired. And here I am in their shoes, retired after 31 years on the faculty. I was a professor in secondary education. Three different times I was chair of the Department of Secondary Education, and I think that's it.
Okay. Obviously, we have listed the different periods, teachers' college and state college. Do you remember anything about the transition periods, in particular changes that you had?
Not really. Even though I taught this in my history of education class, the demarcations of when Slippery Rock moved from a state teachers' college to a state college to a state university. It was a state college when I was here as an undergraduate. When I returned in 1972, it was still a state college. And then we became a university, I believe, in the 1980s, mm-hmm. about mid-80s, somewhere around 83, 84. As a faculty member, we didn't notice much of a transition, except that it better reflected the mission of the college / university. But graduate programs didn't come to Slippery Rock until after I left in 1963. I think one of my colleagues, Bev Lewis, was one of the first recipients of a graduate degree from Slippery Rock, and I think that was in 64 or 65, but I was teaching in the public schools at that time.
If they were available when you were here, do you think you would have continued into that, or would you have gone and taught regardless?
No, I wanted to teach, and I graduated at half year, and was lucky enough to get a teaching position for a half year, and then I switched school districts, and I began to pursue my master's degree at Duquesne University.
Okay. The department you're hired into, can you talk about some of the changes that you
noticed? Oh, yes. I was hired into secondary ed, and the department was very, very small at the time. One of my colleagues was Dr. Henry Lenz, who was also in the secondary ed department, along with Dr. Bill McKay, who became chair of the department. The secondary ed department was so small when I came that much of it was housed in the dean's office under Narcisco Gambaroni. And when the collective bargaining agreement came into force, administrators and faculty were separated. So Dr. Gambaroni became associate dean in the College of Education, and Bill McKay was elected as chair of secondary ed. I believe there were about eight of us in the department at the time. Elementary ed was maybe three times the size of our department. And then during my tenure, Dean Walker, Wayne Walker, decided to merge the two departments along with library science. And we formed a Department of Curriculum and Instruction. That was in the 80s. And I chaired that department, but I wasn't the first chair of the combined department. And then in the 90s, we again separated. By that time, library science had become a defunct mm-hmm. as a department, and those faculty members were absorbed into the elementary and secondary departments.
Okay, you mentioned it was secondary is very small. Now I think, you know, secondary and history is probably the biggest group of majors I think we have on campus. Do you remember the steps that kind of made that progression happen from very small to the biggest?
Well, there's a long tradition. I was a secondary ed social studies major. English was my minor when I was a student here in the 60s. So it has a long tradition. And some of the faculty members that I had were Duncan and Fraser and Halt and Moore and some of those professors. And so the secondary ed department just kind of evolved, and there wasn't one impetus that created the influx of majors in social studies and English. Mm-hmm. But basically, I taught a secondary methods class to future social studies teachers briefly, and Dr. Lenz was the principal individual doing that. And then following Dr. McKay's retirement, I began to teach English methods to secondary students.
Okay. Can you talk about the buildings that you worked in or lived in on campus and kind of what you thought?
Well, when I came back as a faculty member, I moved into McKay Education Building and had a number of offices in that building. When I was a student, I just remember it as a functioning elementary school mm-hmm. as part of the school district and not necessarily part of the campus. Most of my classes were in West Hall and in Old Main. And Old Main was a thriving classroom building. Professors had their offices in the small, what we would now call closets almost. And the West Hall and Miller Auditorium. So there weren't that many classroom buildings per se. The whole lower campus was just starting to be built, and I never had any classes in any of in Vincent or in Morrow Fieldhouse.
Okay. As a student, we have first impressions of the university. What did you think, you know, when you first came as a student as compared to?
Well, it was just such a small place. We only had about 1,500 students total. We probably only had 600 to 700 on campus. As I said, the female students were in Northall, the male students were in Patterson. The art building was there as I remember it, and they were just completing roads, and and behavior, and I did have a couple classes in behavioral science building too. So that was the range of the campus. Anything below the Encore Stadium, Thompson Stadium, really was non-existent. Mm-hmm.
Okay, did you ever think that, you know, when you graduated, that you'd actually eventually come back to work here?
Oh no, it was the farthest thing from my mind. I was a typical undergraduate student. I was never coming back. I was glad to get out. I was glad to move on to my chosen career. And first of all, when I came back, the time period between 1963 and 1972, it was like coming back into a new world, because the whole lower campus was developing. Many buildings had been built: Spots, Eisenberg, Vincent, Morrow Fieldhouse. Couldn't believe the size of the place and the number of thousands of students that we had at the time. I think it was around 4,000 or 5,000 students, maybe not that quite that high. It was a different place. And the size of the faculty, the fact that the faculty didn't have a lot of connections to the town, it was more of a university atmosphere that I had been used to in my master's and doctoral programs, where I went to larger universities. So the it was indeed a revelation, and I think I was thankful that some of the faculty members that I had as professors hadn't retired, because they were the link, they were the bridge between me as a new faculty member and the huge institution that Slippery Rock has become.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do you remember the process when you first heard about the opening, and was that something you jumped on because you're...
Well, that was interesting. It actually has a... how I heard about the job was that I called the chair of the history department, Dr. Duncan, and I was teaching at the University of Akron in Akron, Ohio. And tragically, in May of 1971, my father passed instantly. He just dropped dead right in the kitchen of my parents' home. And I was finishing this semester. We were on quarters at the University of Akron. And my mother really wanted me to come back. And so I thought of Slippery Rock, obviously, being a graduate. And I called Dr. Duncan and I said, you know, are there any openings? And I felt an obligation to complete the next year at the University of Akron, where I was under contract as an assistant professor. And so he said, well, why don't you call Dr. Gambaroni? I think he's looking for someone in the history and philosophy of education, and we have such a course here. And so I called Dr. Gambaroni, and the rest is history. And what was most interesting, as a faculty member, when I came, I taught only night classes and in four different locations. Each night of the week, Monday through Thursday, I was in a different location, and I taught only one class on campus and three were off campus, because at that time student teachers had to take history and philosophy of education as part of their student teaching semester. So I taught and got to know about the different school districts and the buildings that I taught in off campus. So I felt like an itinerant teacher, but I really liked it, and got to know the students and found that Slippery Rock's still the same. The best thing about Slippery Rock are the students that come here and the camaraderie and the family atmosphere that we create here. And I was so glad to be a part of it. And I really think the fact that I was a former student helped me in relating to the students that I taught.
Okay. You mentioned your positions you held. Can you talk about some of the activities in terms of committees like that you were involved in?
Well, faculty members and committees, most of those spots are not positive because the committee work is, you know, just incredible, the amount of time that you put in, but necessary time. It also documents the need for full-time faculty members, because part-time faculty members really can't do a lot of committee work because they have other obligations. But I was on some fun committees, some involving the student government, where I was the faculty liaison to some of the committees. The Greek God and Goddess committee was interesting. I wound up being an advisor for one semester to a sorority. I don't know how that happened. And then also the volleyball club was formed. But what you need to understand is this. You can't get money, if you're a student and you're in the student organization, you can't get money from Student Government Association unless you have a faculty representative. And it legitimizes your student activity. So some of those things, fortunately, I never had to sit on the disciplinary board or other aspects of student government. But most of my committee work was obviously as a faculty member, and I probably served on every committee in the department, chaired most of them, or many of them, I should say, and that's really where a lot of the work is done. Mm-hmm. Everything from hiring to curriculum, strategic goals and things like that that the department wants to achieve, and some service with a lot of success and some with a lot of frustration.
Okay. On that note, what do you consider your biggest accomplishments at the university?
Staying power. The thing is that I have to honestly say I never thought of it as a job. I always thought of it as a career choice, and I think that's one of the things that distinguishes a professional. And having a professional career is a commitment, you know, that you make personally to your students and to the institution. I think two or three things. One is that I really cherished being an advisor to students. And I know not all faculty members like that role, but I received a number of awards from student government as advisor of the year and advisor within the College of Education. So I was recognized for that. I offered some real good advice, and particularly to students, and particularly the ability to go through the maze of curricular choices and make sure that they kept their eye on the prize. So that was one of the things. Obviously, to chair the department and see it grow, build a graduate program, One of the fine additions that we had to the faculty was Dr. Lehman, who really spearheaded a lot of our graduate work in science and math, and we've been able since to extend that to social studies and English. So the department has really grown, and now, thanks to Dean Herzog, we have a principals program that in the College of Education, and I was able to become an evaluator for secondary school principals. So anyway, those are some things that that I feel very, very strongly about. And the obvious recognition that I received for the various benchmarks for teaching here and being a faculty member. And I really enjoyed being on university committees. I was on everything from promotion to academic affairs, which is basically curriculum, and I enjoyed seeing that process, the university-wide committees, and helping with the governance of the institution.
Okay. From a teaching standpoint, you mentioned some of the things you enjoyed about it. Do you have any specific best or worst moments or situations you can remember?
No, but I have a number of stories. And the thing is that when you see students who you had as in class, and obviously their growth and their professionalism, and following them out into the schools through field experience and student teaching, and then seeing how they professionally have grown and into various positions within the profession, and some outside. Mm-hmm. You know, I always said that to the students, you know, you have a college degree, now go do something with it, and do something that you like to do. But I've had students who have become millionaires by winning the lottery, and the young lady who did that was teaching down in Beaver Falls School District, and I think her and her husband won $68 million, and I haven't seen a penny of that, so I apparently I didn't create a great influence on her. She didn't remember me, but the thing is that one of the nicest things that always happened is that I had a number of colleagues who I taught within the public schools and knew from the University of Pittsburgh and Duquesne University, and seeing their careers move in a different direction than mine, and yet always coming back to Slippery Rock, because I had known them and went and gone to school with them as undergraduates, and they in turn would mentor many of our students, and I can think of a number of superintendents and principals and so forth. So, but students are, you know, they're the lifeblood of any higher ed institution, and you remember 100 stories, you know. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I used to always say, the students used to come into my office, and I just had a series of bookshelves and so forth, and with books that always ask questions like this: Dr. Black, have you read any of these books? And I would say, well, how do you think they got there? I said, there's at least one person that has read them in here. I said, well, do you have a particular interest? And they might go, and I would let the students borrow the books, and they would say, don't you have a sign-out sheet? You know, how you know that you're going to get these books back? I said, well, some of you will bring them back, some won't, but remember to leave them to me in your will, And but really, don't worry about that because I'll be long gone before you. So anyway, but creating that type of environment, curiosity, a willingness to learn, that's what being a professor is all about in a higher ed institution. And I keep in touch with some of the students, and you never know who you'll keep in touch with, you know, because they have to take some initiative. And some of them are just crazy. They were crazy when you had them as a student, and they're still crazy after all these years. And that's a, you know, a line from an old song. So anyway.
Okay. Leaders on campus, in terms of presidents or deans, things like that.
Well, when I was a student, Wisen Flew was the president.
Okay.
And we didn't know much about him. He wasn't very visible, even though the campus was extremely small. And then he kind of disappeared right after I graduated. I remember the longest conversation I had with him was when I graduated. I graduated at mid-year in January, and he had a couple lines because I had distinguished myself as a student and so forth. But he wasn't very visible. And then when I came back, we had the old Syracuse University offensive lineman as the president. And the story was that he had been on the offensive line when Jim Brown was running for Syracuse, the great NFL back, and mediocre to unskilled actor. So anyway, Wattrell, and he wasn't that visible either, but I was a young faculty member, and he had his staff of people who were administrative aides to him. So basically, he might have been very visible. I know his wife was involved in a number of projects. I think her name might have been Carol. And she was well liked by the faculty. But stories are all what this is about. So I look out my window of McKay Education Building at 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, and there must have been 15 state police cars. And they ring the building, Old Main, and this is when he was deposed. Mm-hmm. And he was banned from his office, and he wasn't able to get into his office. And then the Slippery Rock legends basically came forth. And that is that no president had ever left Slippery Rock willingly of their own volition. We never had a female president, so it was a he. They had never left of their own volition, and naturally that's not true since. But Slippery Rock presidents were always getting fired for a number of reasons, either political or financial malfeasance or something like that. So anyway, Wattrell came, was deposed by the governor, removed him from his position, and then we had an interim. Dr. Roberts, the vice president for academic affairs, served as president for a while, maybe a year or so, and then the board of trustees, or maybe the powers to be in Harrisburg, moved the park in here from Mansfield. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Larry Park came in, and a very nice guy, wound up playing in the Monday Night Golf League. I wound up playing a match or two with him, and he was a pretty decent golfer. And I'm a very mediocre golfer. So anyway, but the long and the short of it is we really didn't have a president after Wattrell left. And the faculty decided they would band together collectively and make sure the institution was held together, moved on. Everything as far as the students were concerned, you know, seemed to be kosher. and but there was a lot of internal fighting and bickering. Our understanding was that powers to be in Harrisburg wanted Park out at Mansfield, and they sent him here. And whether that was true or not. And so then came Herb Reinhart. And if you talk about a guy that should have never been a president of a university, that was Reinhart. He came from Florida, and his idea of management was dictatorial. And no aspersions to his German ancestry, but somewhere along he must have had strong Prussian strains. So anyway, he thought he could fire faculty when he felt like it. And he created a terrible environment for the faculty. But for the community and for public relations, he was hell-bent on building the Slippery Rock image. He was not an academic. He basically had come through the student personnel route into higher education. And he was at one of the big Florida schools. It might have been Florida State. But anyway, so while the faculty were at odds with Reinhart, the community loved them. He was the one that brought in the McDonald's, or so he claimed, and he tried to build the community. He was very interested in PR, and he decided, because there was an Allegheny Club, as the story goes, there was an Allegheny Club at Three Rivers Stadium, that he was going to have one at our new football field. And so the, in quotes, box over at on the other side of where the stands are at our football stadium, he helped build. And it's like the old Johnny Cash song, you know, taking a part out a week and type of thing. And he apparently got into some violation of contracts in the bidding process and so forth, and it turned out to be his undoing. And he helped fulfill, again, the legend. Mm-hmm. That, or the myth, or whatever you want to call it, that Slippery Rock presidents never retired. So the faculty was not sorry to see him go, and he went on to another presidency, and I believe it was in Kentucky, if I'm not mistaken. So there's a great story that I had with Dr. Reinhart. I was chair of secondary ed, I was chair of curriculum and instruction, I think, at the time. And he wanted something on his desk by Monday. And as I tend to procrastinate, it was a recommendation for a faculty member to receive an award. So I thought it was very meritorious. I wanted to make sure that it got to him. And I think he had set a artificial deadline of either Friday or Saturday. And my recommendation arrived on Monday. And Monday morning. And he calls me at home, and he says, "Dr. Black," he says, "I ask that these recommendations, and yours in particular, be on my office desk either Friday or Saturday." And I said, "Well, Dr. Reinhart, it's on your desk now as we talk." And he said, "Yes, but it wasn't here when I arrived this morning. Mail didn't come till about 9:30. And I said, "Oh," I said, "well, you know, Dr. Reinhart, maybe you ought to institute Saturday mail delivery." Well, that gives you an example of the angst, if you will, between certain faculty members and Dr. Reinhart. So we weren't glad to, you know, we didn't shed a tear when he left. And then Dr. Ebersole finer individual you couldn't have met. And Bob is just great. And we were so surprised as faculty members as he rose through the ranks from department chair over in PE to coming over as vice president for academic affairs. And we were so glad that one of our own had risen to the presidency. And Dr. Abersole understood how to deal with faculty members, and he understood what the mission of the university was. And even though the students at times always have a little rebellion in them and things that they wanted to see that may not have happened, he served as a very successful president, and as we all know, retired when he chose to retire and help break the long line of nobody retires from Slippery Rock unless they there's some reason. So, and then Warren Smith came in, and then he was president for a while. I always got along with him very, very well and enjoyed him, as I do Robert Smith. So that was the interesting thing from the faculty perspective when we had President Smith and Vice President of Academic Affairs, Smith, so, who is now our current president. And I think the three of them really have helped the institution build and develop and so forth. And I feel very good about my alma mater and about the university that granted me emeritus status.
Okay. Do you have any events you can remember on campus, whether they be national or more local, that stand out to you?
Yes. I remember when Jimmy Carter was running for president, and Andrew Young came. And Andrew Young, I think at the time, may have been the mayor of Atlanta, and he had experience in the cabinet and so forth, and he goes back to the days of Martin Luther King. that was kind of a highlight in an event that you remember. I'm sure there's a number of other things that faculty always tend to remember some things that students don't remember, the whole atmosphere of the professionalism of the faculty and having our own dining area over in North Hall was just just wonderful, and I think it still continues today, and so forth, bringing faculty in from various parts of the campus. The lower campus versus the upper campus, that's a perspective among the faculty that not everybody will acknowledge. If you're in the upper campus, meaning around Old Main, the faculty in the lower campus, where the majority of faculty are, and the majority of liberal arts departments are, that tend to be a little bit more liberal and a little bit more rebellious in their thinking and in their actions. When you're a faculty member in your offices or in the upper campus, they tend to think of you as the administration, even though you aren't, because you're so close to Old Main. And the lower campus is really where the action is, and the students are, and the faculty, teach and reside as far as their offices are concerned. And in a lot of ways where the action is because of the student government and student union and so forth. So you have that kind of artificial divide between the lower campus and the upper campus, which I think is interesting from a faculty perspective. Students, not aware of it, but the faculty live here. You know, they live on the lower end of campus, either in the dorms that they've since bulldozed, you know, in the rock apartments that they've built and so forth. So that's one of the biggest things you hear from people like that I stay in touch with when I was a student here. And, you know, they say, I can't believe how the place has grown and how big it is and so forth. So there's a... There were a number of things. I think one of the things that's really helped Slippery Rock, two events. One is the whole emphasis on diversity, Black History Month, the whole Black cultural affairs offices and so forth have really helped. And then the other is the International Dinner. And bring all peoples, you know, students from different backgrounds together, and I think that basically really helps create an atmosphere here. And there's just so much more to do. As I know, the students today don't believe that, but there's just so much more to do as a student here at Slippery Rock. You know, in the first decade of the 21st century. Than there was when we were here in the 60s. I mean, there was nothing. And we were always trying to find cars. Well, you asked me for interesting events, but when I was a student, one of the biggest things was the Steelers came to train here. And they spent a summer here. So just as they are at St. Vincent's as we speak now. But they came to Slippery Rock. They were going to always to different places. And the size of the players, such as Big Daddy Lipscomb and George Tarasovic and so forth, and Bobby Lane, and a number of these people have become Hall of Famers. And they came up that summer, and I was here as a student that summer, and just took the place by storm. And, you know, created an experience probably that if I had been Dr. Lowry and some of the other administrators at the time, they probably were so glad to get rid of them. But anyway, that was a real interesting experience, and you know, it just for the guys, you know, seeing professional athletes, you know, and for the gals, you know, just seeing a different type of grown men in, you know, their mid to late 20s and into their 30s and so forth. So that was an interesting story that came out of summer school in the summer of 61 or 62. I don't know which. Or maybe even 60.
Okay. What do you miss about being here at SRU?
Well, obviously the students. I love teaching. I still do. I haven't. I've been retired 5 years. I mean, this became my second home. You know, and the thing is, what has happened to being a faculty member these days? There's many things you don't miss. You know, you don't miss the tons of paperwork, the committees. You know, the committee work and. All the things that take away from teaching. I do miss the advising. I still do some advising to sons and daughters of friends of mine who are, you know, going away to college and that type of thing. And then I had 2 children of my own, and so was able to offer advice. But when you offer advice to your children, it's like offering no advice at all. And I always try to keep in mind what advice is. It's free, cheap, and you can ignore it. But the students, I really miss the students, and I miss a number of my colleagues who obviously have become lifelong friends.
Okay. Do you have any words of wisdom for current or future Rock community members?
No, but come to learn, come to enjoy, come to grow. It's an incubation period, and it's going to be one of the best times of your life, even though you think it isn't when you're here. You know, you come, you spend X number of years, and then you're off to do whatever. And then when you read the alumni magazine, The Rock, you get to see what number of people have done. Naturally, my classmates, when I was an undergraduate, practically everybody went into education. Today, people go into everything. And it's refreshing how widely held Slippery Rock is out there in the world, you know, in our community. People who went here as undergraduates still love the place, still like to come back and have good memories. And one of the things that I can add as a faculty member is there were a number of my classmates who went on to teach in higher education at different institutions, like two I can remember. One I grew up with in my hometown, who wound up teaching at Bloomsburg, and one who was a classmate here wound up being an administrator and a teacher at our sister school, California. And when I talk to them, you know, they always talk about, you know, that Rock identity, even though they spent a career at some of our sister institutions. So it grabs you. Mm-hmm. And when it grabs you, it's just a part of your life. It's like returning to your own hometown and some of those memories that you were so glad to get away from, and here you are cherishing them in a number of ways.
Okay. We like to close with this one. How would you like to be remembered?
Personally?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know how to answer that. I'd like to be remembered as an undergraduate who came and learned a lot, took academics seriously. I was very much of a athletic type when I came here, and as I like to say, you know, when I came here, I had athlete's feet. And when I left, I had jock itch. So the thing is that I became less and less of a jock, and I had a very strong athletic background. So I turned to academics, and never regretted it. And still, I am a big sports enthusiast. And then, as a faculty member, someone who gave his best to his students, created a learning environment for them, and in some ways, you know, for every student's different what they take out of your class, and particularly my advisees. I miss them, and hope they're doing well, whether they listen to my advice or not. And But basically, you know, I'll probably be remembered as a faculty member in secondary education here at Slippery Rock, and I don't know if I've made that great a mark. I sure have. In terms of carrying Slippery Rock's message to the state and to the national. I was Teacher Educator of the Year for our statewide organization, the Pennsylvania Association of Colleges and Teacher Educators, in the year 2001. And then we have a National Association of Teacher Educators, and I received a number of awards in that. And honors from that association. But that's all a tribute to Slippery Rock, because if I didn't have the base as a faculty member at Slippery Rock, I couldn't have gained those recognitions at either the state or the national level. So I think that's about it.
All right, Dr. Black, thank you very much for coming in.
My pleasure.
If you ever need to, you know, come in, we'll be more than happy to have you again.
Okay, great. Thanks. And if you have any follow-up, I'll be glad to participate.